Don't talk about those things anymore.
Okay, now, first question is, when did you decide to come out of the closet?
when you told me about those silkscreen pictures. And I found I liked it.
You're crying.
Beth, you hear that? That's my wife, by the air, right.
You created it, didn't you?
Yes. Yes, I did, Father. Bless me, Father, for I have sinned. Or I'm about to. Like right now.
What you been working on? What's been going on with you?
Oh, okay. I got a new book coming out in next spring, I think May, called House Haunted.
Uh-huh.
It's a haunted house novel.
Who's doing it?
Bantam. And after that, I have to write two more for Bantam. I got a contract with them. And the next one's going to be called Skeleton. It's going to be an apocalyptic, broad canvas type novel. So I'll be working on that soon. And I have a Western coming out this fall, November, from Evans.
Is that your first Western?
Yeah, called West Texas.
Uh-huh.
It's about the Buffalo Soldiers, the black soldiers at Fort Davis in Texas.
Yeah. So how'd this come about? I mean, how'd you decide to do it?
I spent about a week out at the fort, in the town of Fort Davis. The last 3 years I've been out there a week every summer, visiting a friend of mine named George Proctor, who's a Western writer. And we're both telescope buffs. And we go out to a thing called the Texas Star Party, which is held in the Davis Mountains, which is the clearest skies in the United States.
I got
States.
A telescope for my birthday.
Yeah?
Fact,
is it a Celestron or a Meade?
I don't remember.
Yeah?
It's a Meade.
Meade, okay. Yeah, all right. Good stuff.
Yeah, it's a big one. It's a nice one.
Okay. Right. You got to be patient with it.
Yeah, I've learned.
And you got any questions, call me.
Well, I was
I'm not joking.
I was setting up and I said, this is not...
Is it a reflector or mirror?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
How big is the mirror? About 6 inches?
Yeah,
8 inches?
Yeah. It's 8 inches.
How are your skies out there?
Oh, they're nice.
Okay.
Well, summer is pretty... It's hazy. But now... It
should be good now when there's
no
moon. You got to wait till the moon starts setting early.
Well, I went out one morning, about 4 o'clock in the morning.
You know what's up now? You got to look at Mars.
Oh,
it's the biggest now. That it's bigger now in the sky than it's going to be the rest of the century. Until 2010, I think.
Yeah.
You'll be able to see... They give you a couple eyepieces with it?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. You go out there, set it up, check out Mars. You'll be able to see a white polar caps.
Okay. Oh, that's great.
It's... Well, I've been at this about 8 years, and I have 4 telescopes, but I go out every, it's been averaging every other year, the way it's been now. But we drive out to the desert, and we stay out for a whole week. We're in near McDonald Observatory, which is University of Texas and Chicago University own it jointly. It's one of the best, they are the best, the clearest skies in the whole United States. Milky Way stretches like it's like a ribbon.
Oh, that must be fantastic. The only time I've ever really seen the Milky Way is at a lake in the country in Alabama.
Yep.
And you could look up and really see that.
It looks like a ribbon.
It looks like
you could out here you can read by it. Let's put it that way.
Right?
I'm not joking either. It comes up and people think it's a cloud. It's so bright.
That must be fantastic.
It's unbelievable. We see things. We went one night. George Proctor and I went through 50 galaxies. We saw different. Just galaxies are happening.
That must be unreal.
Yeah.
Because I went out one morning, about 4 o'clock in the morning, and I was looking around, and I saw these, you know, the bright, bright stars with that. You could see the gas, you know. And
that's
all that.
Right.
And it's like it's a glow.
You know what you got coming out now around that is Orion, which is, it looks like an hourglass.
Mm-hmm.
And Orion, it's a mythological figure, and he has a belt, and he has a sword coming down.
Mm-hmm.
The middle star, the sword is 3 stars, and the middle star is an actual gas cloud. That you can see with the naked eye, but with a good telescope, it blows you away.
Well, it's amazing what you can see with a telescope that you can't see with the eye.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that's incredible to me.
And high power is not what you need. It's just a good mirror, and a low power thing, you'll see it. It'll be like looking through a porthole.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Millions of stars if you look into the Milky Way. But anyway, I got to visiting Fort Davis, which was where the Buffalo Soldiers, who was black cavalry, were stationed after the Civil War, and I wrote a novel about one of them who's a Sherlock Holmes freak, and is a serial killer in the 1890s. This is around the time of Jack the Ripper, killing people in the desert, out in the desert, and he tracks the guy down. So I had a ball with
different.
That. Yeah, so they want a sequel to that already over there. So I that one will be out this fall. I guess the end of this fall, November, which is this month. Actually, well, I delivered it in July. They're publishing it in hardcover the end of this month.
Right.
I mean, that's real fast.
Now, you work pretty quickly, don't you? I mean, don't you?
No, this book I did, this particular book I did, but usually it takes, I would say, four months.
That's pretty fast, man.
Depends on the size. It depends on the book. A book for Bantam, I'll work a little bit longer than 6 months, maybe.
It seems like most writers take about eight to 10 months on
a
book.
Yeah. Well, I used to, but I've tightened it up because I had to. You got to work a little faster.
Did you get any new equipment to help you?
I have a pretty good word processor I've been using for about 4 years. Yeah. And
I got this computer, typewriter, and it's really helped me quite a bit. Because it used to take me like 9 to 10 months to do a book, and now it's like down to five.
Well, you know what I found? Once I got the word processor, I figured it out mathematically. It's 40% more efficient. I've been doing 40% more. I used to do 5 pages a day. I do 7 now.
Yeah.
Without any more effort.
Uh-huh.
Just because of the word processor.
Oh, it's great. Yeah.
You don't have to. It's just, I figured out it's probably just because you don't have to push the platen back. You know, with that thing.
Right.
You don't. You just keep going. You just keep going. And the eraser, I don't have to use whiteout anymore.
I know. That used to be a problem, you know, doing the whiteout.
It's horrible. My first couple of novels were just, you know, half whiteout.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah. That used to be a real problem.
And, okay, I got one more for you. I got a side career going with Simon Schuster. I do humor anthologies for them. I've done two collections of pieces by Woody Allen and Bill Cosby and things like that. But I was, I got a book that'll be out next summer called The Best. No, it's called The Treasury of National Lampoon Humor. It's the best of the National Lampoon magazine, 20 years from there. So I edited it. It's about 75 pieces, and they're real excited about that.
So you do a lot of different things. I mean,
you got to diversify. I think one of the keys in the business now is to be, last year I did a science fiction novel. This year I got a Western and a horror novel and the humor stuff. And you got to be open to doing
different things. It seems like that's important now because it seems like horror, I think many writers are finding limits on what they can do in the horror field.
Yeah.
And there seems to be kind of a general feeling that horror is kind of a... It's
not a dead end. I wouldn't call it a dead end, but it's... there are limits.
Yeah.
And you can only go so... If you're really serious about a career, you have to be ready to do other things.
Mm-hmm.
I won't say you have to, but you have to be ready.
Mm-hmm.
And I still think the horror field, though, still needs good books.
Mm-hmm.
I think there are too many bad ones being published, and I think that there's still room for the good ones.
Do you think those bad ones have hurt at all?
I don't know. That's kind of a... It's almost a futile question, because I was in the science fiction field for a long time. I edited books, and I saw so much bad work, and it didn't seem to make any difference. Books were getting published anyway, and whatever the publishers decide, they can fit into their lines. They're going to publish that many books anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I do think there are too many bad horror novels now, and I think actually your question is more valid than I thought to begin with, because the preponderance of bad ones, the lower price spread, you know, the lower lines, Onyx lines. I don't want to name names, but it's just too many of the supermarket type ones. I think they're clogging the arteries.
Yeah, I think they are too.
Yeah.
And, there's nothing to be done about it.
But if the readers are buying, I've never been able, the readers, I don't know what the readers are.
But does that mean, mean that the readers have lowered their expectations?
I don't know. I don't know. Whenever I try to think of what an ideal reader is, or what any reader is, I still get a fuzzy image after all these years, because I don't know who they are.
But you kind of approach writing in a different avenue than a lot of writers, since you have been in the business, in the publishing end of it, as an editor.
I got to see. I was lucky to be able to experience that end of it, and it kind of the awe that a lot of writers have for the New York publishing establishment, I don't have.
Yeah.
Because I know they're just, a lot of them are just, they're just people.
Right.
You know, they're not
and they don't know all the answers.
No, they don't. They don't. And some of them, the good ones will admit it, and the rest of them, it's always been hard.
Yeah, yeah. And it is almost like a crap game, isn't it? I mean, you I guess you have...
You got to be savvy. You have to be...
the market research, and you have the benefit of experience, but a lot of it is...
I don't know. A lot of people seem to think my background is kind of special, but to me it's just, you know, I mean...
Mm-hmm.
I worked at Doubleday with Jackie Onassis for a while, for God's sake. Yeah. People like that. Yeah. Isaac Asimov was the first guy I worked with. Mm-hmm. And it was, to me, it's awe-inspiring now to think about. I mean, I met Ray Bradbury there, a lot of other people. Worked with Walter Tempest before mm-hmm. he died. Mm-hmm. But it was just a job. And then, but I always aspired to, I was always writing on the side, and I started to sell short fiction, and I was able to break away from the editing side. Editing is not easy. It's not as easy as a lot of writers think, but it's...
Well, I'm sure it's tough. I mean, I think it'd be really, that's something I could not do, is edit somebody else's work. I think that'd be very difficult to do.
Well, the key to editing is to let them do their own thing and be savvy enough not to try to change it. I knew a couple editors who liked to change things around. And they weren't the good ones.
Mm-hmm.
There's a difference between good editors. You can get in and say what the problems are. I've worked with some excellent line editors, and I can kind of tell the difference. I think I have the benefit of being able to tell the difference when they're jerking me around or not. And I have not been jerked around. I've been kind of lucky on that end.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't hold much awe for the business because I know what it's like on the inside. It's a wonderful business, but it's... It's not as kind of saddens me when I see newcomers come up and it's just like completely cowed by these people.
Mm-hmm.
They're just people. Some of them are very good people and some of them are very good at their jobs. It's like everybody, the Peter Principle works in publishing too.
I was talking to Sean Costello today and he said that it always amazed him that 1 year this was an impenetrable fortress the publishing business was. And the next year they were calling him.
All of a sudden he's been sucked in like a vacuum.
All of a sudden it's like he has his entry.
That's right.
You know,
entree.
That's
they call it. Yeah.
That's right. And he's in there. And it's
some of us tend to forget how far we've come sometimes.
I know, and I think that's amazing.
Yeah.
We have come a long, long way.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we're in situations that where most people just
are still have they have no conception
have no
of
perception.
It. And I just think of it as sometimes I think of it as a job.
Yeah.
And my wife keeps bringing me back down to earth and saying, well, what you do is not just a job.
Yeah.
Most people do not understand what you do and don't expect them to.
But you know how amazing it is how many people wish to become a writer, wish they could be a writer. And you even, you know, you hear these actors and actors, stars out in Hollywood.
Right.
Boy, you know, I'm going to quit this and I'm going to write a novel. You know, Kirk Douglas just did a novel. And he says, this is something I've been wanting to do all my life. Because now I'm in control of what I'm doing. I'm writing this novel. I'm in control. You think Kirk Douglas would have had to be satisfied with his life. He wouldn't
Spartacus for God.
More. But he obviously wanted to become a writer.
That's right.
Although,
and the flip side of that, though, is the people you get at cocktail parties who say, I have a great idea. Lawyer friends and things like that. I have a couple of friends like that, and I feel like dealt them because...
Yeah,
they're demeaning what we do. You know, when somebody says that to me now, I say, well, what did you make last year?
Yeah.
Or what, you know, I wanted to be a lawyer, but I didn't feel like, you know, going through the work or, you know. I wanted to be a brain surgeon, but I don't have the time. You know? Yeah, I mean, it really is the same question.
Yeah.
Really, but once again, my wife, Beth, keeps telling me, you know, have a little patience with these people because you're literally in a unique profession.
You really are.
You know, I mean, no one understands what it's like until you do it.
Yeah, I think it's a wonderful profession. I think that, I know, I can't think of anything I'd rather be doing. I don't think I can think of anything I could do.
Right.
Besides, but, I think there comes a point when you're writing, when something, if you have a problem in the book, you're really alone because nobody can help you.
It's great in a way. It's kind of invigorating.
Well,
it's hard, but it's invigorating because you have to solve it yourself. I don't know about you, but when I hit the wall, which is really what you're talking about, I pace. I have a place in the house where I pace back and forth. It might take 2 hours. And then maybe I'll sleep on it. But sooner or later, you break through the wall.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's your job.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
The ones who I have no patience for anymore are the ones who whine about, I'm writing now. I have writer's block. And I just don't feel like it.
Mm-hmm.
When it's your job, you do it. And you find a way to get through the wall.
Mm-hmm. Well, do you find that you come up with these solutions, whether you realize it or not? I mean, these things kind of happen.
Sometimes they're circling, you know.
And I wonder why.
That's a very mysterious process.
But, you know, you get the questions of where do you come up with your ideas and how can you answer that? That's one of those things you can't answer. How did you learn to write?
Was it Stephen King's at Utica? New York.
Yeah, right, right.
I get them in the mail from Utica, New York. I haven't been able to top that one. You know, I mean, where do you get your ideas?
You can't tell. Yeah. How did you learn to ride? How do you learn to ride?
What I tell them is you have 10 years to put aside and do nothing else. And, you know, just keep pounding a typewriter like a monkey, and sooner or later it'll start making sense.
Right.
But you can't tell anybody. I don't even know how it works.
No, I don't know how
it works. Do you remember, Rick, your first short story, when the first time you got it right, and how mysterious it was? But I remember doing it. It was like another person now. I remember there was another Al Serantonio.
It feels like another person. I mean, don't you think that sometimes?
Oh, yeah. I can't conceive of that now, because I just do it now. But then it was... I remember the very first time, because I sold it to Asimov's man. Isaac Asimov helped me sell my first short story, because I knew him.
Yeah.
Right, I mean, that was fun. I mean, and I told him, I said, if this thing sent it back to me, Isaac Asimov, for Christ's sake, he brings it home over a weekend. He brought it back the next week when he came into Doubleday Books, and he said, this is wonderful. I'm passing this on to George Sithers at Asimov's magazine. I said, your magazine. And they bought it. And I was high for a week. But I knew it worked. You know, I'd written how many scores of short stories before then? There was always something missing. But that one, when I wrote it, I said, well, it's right. And then the next one, I knew it was even more right.
Uh-huh.
And it's not just confidence. It's just, it's a self, I always explain it to people when they ask me, it's the only profession in the world that's completely self-taught. Mm-hmm. No one can teach you how to write. I went to the Clarion Science Fiction Writers Workshop in 1974. I met Gordy Dixon here this weekend, who I hadn't seen. He was one of my teachers then.
Mm-hmm.
He and Harlan Ellison, Tom Dish, Damon Knight, Kate Wilhelm, and I hadn't seen Gordy Dixon since 1974. And I said, Gordy, I just want to tell you, you don't know this, but you taught me things 16 years ago that you don't realize that they germinated, and they've helped me now. And he was flattered. He was truly flattered.
Yeah.
You know, I haven't seen the guy in 16 years. But you cannot teach people how to write, and my point is you can teach them how to teach themselves. You can help them teach themselves. It's the most lonely profession in the world as far as teaching goes.
Mm-hmm. Well, there are no shortcuts, and people seem to think there are shortcuts.
There are.
There are tricks.
Each of us reaches it, I think, in our own mysterious way. You know?
This thing about working out problems, and
they
seem to work out, somehow they do work out by themselves. Either your mind rejects a particular situation, or it goes through the wall and works it out.
Right, I find that if I sleep on something, it usually works itself out the next day.
Sometimes I feel it's like, when you read a review or something, it's like they're talking about somebody else.
Sometimes
really
they are. Reviews are the toughest part. I got my first, the new book that just came out, I got some mamby-pamby reviews on it. First time I've gotten not good reviews in a couple of years, and they hurt.
Yeah.
I'd forgotten what it was like. You get a little bit spoiled because you get some, they're mostly good. You get a couple of books, and they're mostly good. And this one, they were kind of mamby-pamby on it, and it really hurt bad. And you never get over that. And you keep immediately say, I did something wrong. It was me. It had to be me. Because they have to be right. But that's not true. That's not true. You know, they're not gonna, sometimes they're not going to understand everything you write. And you write the book that is in your head. You can't write what anybody else's idea of a book is.
Mm-hmm.
And... it's a wonderful, it's a wonderful profession. Sometimes I had to just sit down and think about, I'm so busy doing it, I think all of us are, that we don't take enough time to sit down and say, wait, this is pretty cool.
Yeah.
My life, my career is
a
pretty cool thing.
I was at a writer's seminar in Texas a couple of weeks ago, and talking about writing, how do you write? I mean, the questions they posed were such that if you really sat down and thought about all these things, you really would probably have trouble writing. I mean,
the mechanics and everything.
They're
second nature after a while.
You can't think about those things.
No.
You just don't think about those things.
No. They're there.
You
do them.
They're there.
It's like asking a milkman, well, exactly how many degrees do you lift the, the thing up and carry it? Yeah, it's the same thing. It's mechanics. It's like a baseball player, a good pitcher.
Yeah.
Sure.
That just does it instinctively.
He does it.
And knows when that leaves the hand, where it's going.
Right.
And
we could, if we thought about it too much, I think we'd
would
go nuts.
I think we would.
Yeah.
But I do sometimes feel like they're talking about somebody else, that I'm like two people, and that like I'm Rick, and Rick is I'm Rick, person, and Robert is somebody else.
Right.
You know, and right. The person who wrote this is somebody distant from me.
That's right. That's right.
And it's kind of a bizarre thing.
It's a very mysterious. I don't think any of us will ever figure it out, and I hope we don't. Because that's part of the magic, I think, is that we're not allowed to figure it out.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Did you have anything to ask, Al, about the October?
I enjoyed October.
Oh, I'm glad to hear that. I'm glad to hear that. I got the feeling it went over some. I had a couple people come up to me this weekend and say, oh, thanks for writing October, but I didn't understand a word of it. And I said, what am I going to say? What are you supposed to say, you know? Well, okay, you know, I'll sign it anyway if you want me to, you know. You know, I'll sign your forehead, you know, with a beer butcher knife, you know. You know.
It was...
It's a very introspective book.
Yeah.
I think, you know, and...
Well, the feeling, you wrote... No, Overlook Connects in Catalonia.
Oh, yeah. My little pretentious thing there, yeah. But it was kind of...
You wanted people to feel October, and I felt October when I read it, and that was before I knew that you wanted people to feel October. I mean, when I read it, honestly, the story was, for me, kind of... But the book was good.
Yeah.
Because I got into it, and I got into the
It was more mood than anything.
Yeah, it was.
It was very atmospheric. But that's what I...
Moonbane last year was...
Different, completely different.
All story, all...
Whammo.
Yeah.
Well, that's why I'm going back to Whammo, because Bantam wants me to do Whammo. So, you know, what are you going to do, you know? I got this next one coming out as kind of almost a... it's much more extroverted than October. And the one after that is going to be completely extroverted. It's just going to be your broad-based canvas, end of the world type novel. You know, I won't compare it to Swan Song, but you know the kind of, big canvas novel, you know. And that's what they're just drooling, you know, this is what we want you to do, this is what you, and I said, all right, I'll do it, you know.
Right.
And I've come in kind of in the mood to do that anyway, you know.
Yeah.
I enjoy doing different things. I don't want to do every book the same way. But I had to get October out of my system. I mean, it was something that's been there for two or three years. And if even three people understand it, I'll be happy, because I was trying to capture, it's a very special month. Especially for people in this field, you know, Halloween is it was my Halloween novel.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And
As I said, I enjoyed the book a whole lot.
Glad.
The feelings that came through.
Yeah. That's what I was. That was the gas that I was running on. You know, I'm glad. I'm glad you said that, because it makes me feel a little better. Because you never know. You know, you never know what you do. Because you have to have a direction. You know. And sometimes you write a kick-ass story.
For sure. And they all can't be the same.
Actually, the kick-ass ones are probably more fun than anything else, you know? And they're easier to write, I think, than if you try to be...
Uh-huh.
I almost got pretentious with this book, and I realize that now.
Well,
it's almost necessary. Yeah.
In my recommended reading list, which hasn't come out yet, it won't for another couple of months, but I described it as being, and I'm not a... reviewer or critic, but
well, you know what a reviewer or critic is? It's just a reader.
Yeah.
A good reader is what a good reviewer is. I had a little chat with Ed Bryan tonight, and I don't. This is still on. I don't think I'll keep my mouth shut. I don't agree with everything Ed says, but so
yeah.
You know.
Well, I describe this as more of a literary, and I put it in quotes, novel than
it was conscious. It was conscious.
And that came across, but I thought that was good, because I don't like reading the same thing over and over again.
Right.
Whether 20 novels that are all rip-offs of Swan Song or 20 novels by Rick that are all the same. I don't like that. I want a little bit of variety.
Right.
And I liked Moonbane a whole lot. I liked October a whole lot. They were very different.
Different. Animals. They are. They're very different.
And I was glad to see that they were different.
Oh.
Instead of just, you hit it with Moonbane, and so...
Do another Moonbane. Yeah, right. Yeah, I don't know. I think all of us, you know this, Rick, the book grabs you by the nose and it takes you where it's going and you follow along.
Sure. I think there are a lot of people who would like you to do the same type of book over and over and be comfortable and for them.
Well, yeah, how many times have you been in? But I know there's Swan.
Sure.
I had a guy once, I did a story that is... gained some notoriety called Pumpkinhead years ago.
Yeah.
You know how many people come up to me and say, would you write me another Pumpkinhead for my anthology? I don't even answer them. You know, I'm just looking at them. You want to reprint it? Go ahead, you know.
Right.
You know, you can't, right. You don't do the same deal twice. You don't do the same riff twice.
So you're looking forward to the big book?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's going to be different for you, isn't it?
I haven't done one this big. This next one, House Haunted, is pretty big.
Uh-huh.
It's kind of middling big
uh-huh.
for me, which is so I'm kind of
yeah,
stretching the
it.
Muscles.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So I'll be ready, I think, and I'm ready to kick a little butt. You know, I think it's time. It's gonna be fun. Kind of.
Well, they are fun. I mean, to really stretch out like
right.
that is fun. Have a lot going on. That's fun.
Yeah, just keep going.
Yeah.
Just keep pushing it ahead. Don't think too hard about it. You
yeah.
know, I thought too hard the last couple of novels. Actually, my Western is not very long, but it's kind of like that. I wrote that quicker than anything else. It was 2 months, 8 weeks, which is very short, especially for me. And but they love it, you know. I mean, it must have come out all right. And I had a ball doing it, you know, because you use a different part of your brain, you know. Mm-hmm. Every book is different. Every book has to be different, or you might as well just be a series writer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and crank out a book
yeah.
every 2 weeks, you know, and get paid for it.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. I mean, this what's so wonderful about this is that you let the book take you where it's going. And then hopefully you shape it and
yeah.
it comes out good at the end.
Well, before this, when I was working out in the real world, I guess, or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I used to get bored after like 6 months at the same job.
There's a writer's profile, somebody's.
Ooh.
I'm sure somebody has socked away somewhere in a Defense Department file. We're not very, I think your basic writer's profile is we're not good Germans, let's put it that way.
That's exactly.
You know, we get bored easily and need to do different. I had a guy gave me that, the Cooter occupational test, it's a college, they gave it to me. I bombed out of engineering school. My dad worked in the space shuttle. He was a big aerospace engineer. And I went to engineering school because I thought maybe I want to be an engineer, but I bombed out after half a semester. I was getting terrible grades. So they gave me the Cooter occupational test. The guy sat down and it took him 20 minutes to get around to what he was saying. He says, I've never seen anything like this. You don't fit into any category. I don't know what you want to be when you grow up, which is what I'm supposed to. He says, this is what my job is to tell you, what you want to be when I grow up. And he says, it says here you have some science skills, you have some English skills, but none of them gel into anything that I can put in a pigeonhole. He says, well, maybe you want to be a small newspaper editor. And he came kind of close to it there. And 5 years later, of course, I was you know, I'd become a writer.
I'd like to be able to change everything every 6 months or so, just change the world and change the people.
Well, did you do little jobs?
Oh, yeah.
Small jobs?
Yeah.
If you got out of school or before or
uh-huh.
whatever.
And
I had like everyone, it would last for a while and they'd get damn bored with
same
it.
Same thing over and over again. It's like,
yeah.
I can't stand
yeah.
going there.
You'd meet some nice people, you know, and you'd get
yeah.
make some friends, but then after a few months, you'd go nuts and want to do something else.
But you know, didn't every job I would always meet people who were perfectly content to be doing the same thing.
That's right.
Day in and day out.
And I could never understand them.
No. They couldn't understand me.
Right.
It was like, no, they didn't want any kind of open frontier. They wanted to know this was their desk, this was their portion of the desk, this is what they did every
what
day.
They have to do.
Yeah,
fulfill
this was
their
task.
Right. There's nothing wrong with that.
No, no.
But it's different. I think our brains must have been hit by cosmic rays or something because we just don't think that way. I think there is a basic writer's profile, a psychological profile. A lot of people don't know how to categorize it. You know, the IRS doesn't categorize it.
Oh, God,
that's not even for.
No.
But they don't even have a number for what our occupation is. There's
right.
no number for
right.
it. The closest, it's a general, big general thing.
Yeah.
And I always found that hilarious because it's just proves that they don't know what we do. They don't know what we are. Nobody does.
But and how this works. They don't know how this works.
I don't think we do either. That was the point
yeah, well,
that's I was trying to make before.
Yeah.
And I don't want to mess with the machinery. I'm happy to see it working. And I'm happy to use it. But I love this business. I love it. With all the bitching and all the hard stuff you have to go through.
Well, I do feel like it's a family. I really do. I do feel that. I know that's probably corny and all that crap.
Corny works.
But I really do feel it's a family and everybody's pulling together. You know, I don't feel it's a big combat competition and all that stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like if somebody's successful, everybody's happy for that person.
I'm not quite that optimistic
about
it. But I know what you mean. I know what you mean. I feel closer to the people in my profession than I do. I have a lot of friends at home, but I'm still kind of the alien, you know. It took them 10 years to, I think, accept what the hell I did. Until we bought a new house, I was talking about Hunter. Until we bought that house, you know, I was weird because I stay home with my kids. You know, two kids. Mm-hmm. My wife goes to work. Nobody could quite peg us because we don't fit in the pigeonhole. Mm-hmm. But all of a sudden, you know, after I finally achieved the American dream, you buy your own house, two cars, and all that crap, all of a sudden I'm acceptable. And I don't get the weird looks anymore,
yeah.
You know. He's a writer. Okay, well, whatever the fuck he does.
And it's not like, what do you do? You're a writer. Oh, well, what else do you do?
Right. I don't get that anymore. Used to get it in the beginning.
Right.
In fact, it really upset me for a while.
Yeah.
Have you had anything published? I've only gotten that once in the last 5 years.
Uh-huh.
But it used to be common class. Oh,
common, yes.
I'm a writer. Maybe I'm more gray now and I just look like I'm too old to be a bum, you know? You know, they don't give me the question anymore. That could really be the answer. I don't even want to think about that. Yeah. Well, I guess we have to believe him, you know. Yeah, he's a complete bum.
Let's see, my area, if it's somebody I don't know, I'll say, well, have you had anything published? I said, oh, yeah. Well, is it like in stores?
Is it? It's the same questions over and over, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, is it like, can I, and then I try to explain how many books are published every month. 150. You know, have you heard of me? How many authors can you name off the top of your head? Duh. You know?
That's
yeah, if you're a writer, you have to be, you know, John T. McDonald.
Right.
Somebody they would have, Ernest Hemingway.
Tell me something tell me the name of something I might have heard of. Or I might have read.
Right. Well, I wrote War and Peace. I wrote War and Peace. And I wrote The Great Gatsby.
I'm sorry, I haven't heard of that. No.
Yeah, you probably go down a list with some of these people, The Great Gatsby.
No, sorry.
Huckleberry Finn.
No,
I've never heard of it. Moby Dick. Doesn't ring a bell.
No.
That's what amazes me, though. The cocktail questions. Oh, they just drive me nuts.
The Simpsons?
Oh, yes. I wrote The Simpsons, right.
Oh, God, did you write The Simpsons?
Yeah. Oh, man, wow.
Pleased to meet you.
Oh, God.
Oh, man. Thank you, Al. I think that was good. Do you have anything else you want to
know? No, that was a lot of fun.
Thank you.
I appreciate it.